What is going on, everyone? This is Rich, and you are listening to the Welcome to Hope podcast. So today, I wanted to talk about the topic of mindfulness. I know this idea of mindfulness kind of gets thrown around a lot with therapists and other people in the mental health field. And I'll be completely honest with you, I've always heard about it being a good thing, but never really understood why. And even before I started school and before I started working in the field, I heard of mindfulness, but I don't know, always thought it was kind of this, like, I don't know, like this woo-woo kind of therapeutic thing. I don't know. I don't know how to describe it, but it always seemed a little weird to me. But obviously, when I was in grad school, they talked about it. Never really got into the details of why it's helpful, but just talked about it as kind of a coping skill type of a thing. And then as I got in the field and started kind of doing my own research on it, I began to realize the value of it. And so I thought it would be helpful to kind of talk about this a little bit, because I'm guessing some of you out there have maybe had a similar experience to mine and maybe don't quite understand it. And the reality is I'm probably not even going to get close to touching the tip of the iceberg on this, because even in my research for this conversation, I realize there is so much that I don't even fully understand. And so I'm going to explain just a couple things and try to keep it relatively basic. But if anybody out there is really wanting to get into the minutia of this, the details, there's a lot of great YouTube videos and podcasts and things like that on it. One person in particular that I like to listen to is the Huberman Lab. It's Andrew Huberman. He's a neuroscientist, does a lot of studies on the brain and things like that, and podcast episodes on all kinds of topics from a very scientific standpoint. And he's done he has a 2-hour podcast episode on mindfulness. And so if anybody really wants to get into the details of that, I would recommend that. But for the sake of our podcast, and I don't know about you, but I have a hard time listening to a 2-hour podcast. That's why I try to keep ours to about, I don't know, between 15 and 30 minutes, because that's about all my attention span can handle. So I'm going to try and kind of condense some of this information and talk about why it's helpful and some of the benefits of it. But first, I've been thinking about this quote that one of our staff members, Don Gudeman, we have a previous episode with him on here. I believe he's the one that came up with this quote. And the quote is, "The past is for learning, the future is for planning, and the present is for living." And I want to start this whole episode off with that quote, because so much of our anxiety, our depression, and other sort of mental health ailments, if you will, a lot of them have to do with us being in the future or us being stuck in the past. In fact, for most people, depression is usually when we're stuck in the past. Anxiety is usually when we're stuck in the future. And so I think this is kind of foundational for our conversation, in that if we can start to view the past as simply a means for learning, and then view the future as simply a means for planning, then that will take away a lot of our anxieties, a lot of our depression. Now, obviously, that's significantly easier said than done, right? In fact, I tell all of my clients, most of what we talk about in therapy is easier said than done. But I think this is the basic idea of mindfulness, because mindfulness is being in the present. And so why is that important? What is the value of that? And so first I wanted to kind of look at some of the scientific reasons for it without going too detailed. And again, if you want to get into those details, there's some good YouTube videos and podcasts out there. But when we are mindful, what's happening is it's changing our brain, right? Our brain, they talk about the elasticity of the brain. And what that means is our brain is able to sort of evolve. It's able to change. We talk about a lot in our groups about creating new neural pathways, just simply by learning new ways of doing things. Every time you learn a new way of doing something, you're creating neural pathways, new neural pathways. And that's one of the great things about the brain, is it can constantly kind of evolve and change as we need it to evolve and change. And so when we practice mindfulness, it changes our brain and it increases activities in the region of our brains that control the stress regulation. So as some of you probably know, different parts of our brain do different things. And so the parts of our brain that are activated when we are stressed and help us to regulate that stress, those parts of the brain are increased when we are practicing mindfulness. And the parts of our brain that are sort of like our brain's alarm system, those parts of the brain kind of become deactivated, or there's decreased activity. So mindfulness essentially decreases those alarm systems in our head, the anxieties, the depression in our head, and increases the parts of our brain that allow us to regulate our emotions, to regulate that stress. One of these systems is called the amygdala, for those that are interested in that. So essentially, practicing mindfulness, it improves our mood, it decreases our stress, and helps us to focus. It's also been shown to help with chronic pain, inflammation in the body, improving sleep, so all kinds of things. For me, one of the things that stands out is none of this is this, it's not a woo-woo kind of mystical type of a thing. There's actual science behind it. There's actual brain structures that are being changed and things like that. And so what this can do is it can allow us to not ruminate. And now I work with a lot of people with OCD. There's obviously a lot of rumination involved in OCD. Just because you ruminate on things doesn't mean you have OCD. But I'm sure there's lots of you out there that can think of times where you've been stuck ruminating on something. Maybe it's worrying about a particular outcome or worrying about a test or anything like that. And so there's research out there that suggests that by practicing mindfulness, it decreases the rumination. And on a simpler level, right, if you're ruminating on something, you're probably thinking about the past or the future. If you're practicing mindfulness, you are in the present. And if you are in the present, that means all the anxieties and all the depression get pushed to the side, because you can't be anxious and be present at the same time. Like, those two things are impossible. They do not mix well. It's like oil and water. And so for anybody that's dealing with a lot of anxiety or a lot of depression, if you can practice mindfulness, it will push all of that to the side for that period of time that we are doing the mindfulness. And mindfulness is a skill. So what that means is it's going to take time. It's going to take practice. For a lot of people, myself included, sometimes practicing mindfulness is difficult because my mind keeps wandering. and I have a hard time staying focused on whatever it is I need to focus on. Mindfulness can also help with stress. For anybody that's in a high stress situation, maybe it's a season of life, maybe you have a stressful job, any of those kinds of things. Mindfulness can help with increasing or improving memory, your working memory, to be more specific. It helps with focus. It helps us to be less emotionally reactive. It helps us to be more aware of our emotions to begin with. And it gives us more cognitive flexibility, which, and this is a topic that we discuss a lot in our groups here, is cognitive flexibility, which is incredibly important for us to be able to navigate life and just the uncertainties of life, because it allows us to be able to look at things from different perspectives. It keeps us from being stuck on one way of doing things or looking at things. It allows us to be more dialectical. Dialectical meaning being able to look at things kind of in the gray area, because we have a tendency to look at things that are either black or white, right? This is either good or bad. This is either right or wrong. But recognizing that maybe there's some good in this, but maybe there's also some bad, right? That would be more of a dialectical response, or that would mean that you're looking at things in a more cognitively flexible way. And this is vital to being able to go through life in a way that we don't have to deal with all the ups and downs, at least to the extent that we typically do. But mindfulness can also help with relationship satisfaction, which I think would probably have a lot to do with just the emotional benefits from that. And so mindfulness clearly has a lot of mental, emotional, and physical benefits. And yet I think that there's probably a lot of us that don't do this, or at least don't practice it on a regular basis. Now, the way I typically explain mindfulness, the simplest way that I've found to explain it to people that aren't familiar, is if you think of your five senses, right? You've got sight, smell, hearing, touch, and taste. I believe I got those all. And if you think about, and I'll do this sometimes with a client in my office, and I'll say, okay, we're going to sit here quietly for a few seconds, and we're just going to sit here and we're just going to observe and try to recognize all the sounds that we can hear. So we'll sit there for a few seconds, and then I'll just simply ask them, okay, what did you hear, right? And we'll talk about all the different noises that we heard in my office. And as long as we did that from a non-judgmental standpoint, that's mindfulness. It's that simple. We are focused on the present moment, what is going on in the present moment, and we are doing it in a non-judgmental sort of way. So you can do that with sound, with what you hear. You can do that with what you see. Maybe you're scanning the room and looking for everything that's the color red, or something along those lines. You could do touch. So whatever you're, you know, if you're sitting on a chair, like, touch that chair, feel it, notice what it feels like. Is there a texture to it? Is there a temperature to it? The chair I'm sitting in has these kind of seams, and I'm running my fingers along those seams and noticing what those seams feel like, right? That's mindfulness, as long as I'm doing that non-judgmentally. If I'm doing that from a more observational standpoint, or a curious or curiosity. You could do smell. Now, I don't have a very good sense of smell. Some of you out there probably do. But, you know, smelling something and just being very aware of what that smells like, that would also be mindfulness. You could use taste. If any of you have, maybe there's a food, often I ask this question to clients and they mention chocolate as a food that they really enjoy. And that you just kind of, when you eat it, you just savor it. Well, if you imagine that, or any other food that you just absolutely love, when you taste it, maybe you take like a tiny bite and you put it in your mouth and you just, you notice all of the flavors, all of the sensations. That's mindfulness, right? The reality is that it's easy to do that with foods that you really enjoy, but you could do that with water or anything else. You take a drink, notice what it feels like when it hits your tongue. If it's cold water, notice how cold it feels. You swallow it, feel the water going down your throat. That's mindfulness. It's really that simple. In fact, in my research, another thing that I kind of came across was this idea of flow. And now I'm a sports guy. I played sports through college. Enjoy watching sports. In fact, one of my degrees is in sports psychology, and so it's something that always piques my interest when I hear topics like this. But this aspect of flow, if anybody in here has done any sort of performance of some sort, whether it's a sport or acting or musical or dance or any of those kinds of things, any sort of performance, flow is this idea where you're just kind of, you're in the zone, right? You're not really thinking about anything. You're just performing, and you're performing probably better than you ever have. And so there's a lot of research that goes into, like, how do you get to that point, right? Because that's the goal. If you're a performer of any sort, the goal is to always get into that state as often as possible. And really what that comes down to, what this idea of flow comes down to, is you're being mindful. You're being present. You're not thinking about, what if I fail in this area? What is my teammates going to think? What are the fans, the audience going to think? You're not thinking about any of that kind of stuff. You're just performing. You're reacting basically in a way that you've practiced over and over again. And if you think about that in a non-performative sort of way, or at least not in a sports way or a dance or musical way, we all want to be in that flow state through life, don't we? Like, doesn't that sound great? Like, there's no anxiety, there's no depression there. You're just present. I don't know about you, but that sounds amazing to me. If I could just go through my life just present and enjoying the moment and not worrying about what might happen or what has happened, I'm just focusing on what is happening. And in order to get to that, there needs to be this sense of mindfulness. One thing that I'm personally sort of reluctantly starting to do is I'm starting to get into some yoga. Part of the reason for it is I've been doing some research on it and recognizing how good it is for your body. And I say that very reluctantly, because I don't always enjoy it. At times it feels boring to me. Now some of you out there might absolutely love it, and I'm by no means knocking on it. I'm just speaking personally. It's never really been my cup of tea, but I've done all this research and realized how good it is for your body. And I've abused my body through sports and a whole bunch of other, just being a rowdy child in my younger days. And now just getting older, like, my body doesn't respond the same way, and I don't like that. And so I'm starting to engage with this idea of yoga a little bit more. And some of the ones that I've done so far, I'll be honest, one of the things I really enjoy about it is at the end, a lot of times, you just kind of lie there. And I've noticed that just lying still after I've done yoga and kind of stretched all my muscles and just being aware of how my body feels, it just feels so nice. And what that is that's mindfulness, right? There's just something very peaceful about that. And so I hope that this conversation is helpful in at the very least getting you to maybe think about mindfulness a little bit more. I mean, it's not fun necessarily, but it is something that can really benefit all of us, and probably is something that we need to get in the practice of doing more often. And even as I share all of this information with you, it's challenged me a little bit to practice a little bit more mindfulness. So I would encourage all of you out there to try to engage with mindfulness a little bit more along with me, because I think it can benefit all of us. So as always, I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you happen to know somebody that you think could benefit from this, please share that with them. Like and subscribe. And we will have more great episodes coming up here in the very near future.
The content in this program is not intended to be a substitute for professional counseling, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your mental health professional or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have. Never disregard professional advice or delay in seeking counseling because of something you have heard on this podcast. If you or someone you know is in need of counseling in the state of Arizona, feel free to call us at 602-488-6104. If you are in crisis or think you may have an emergency, call 911 immediately. If you are in Maricopa County, Arizona, and are in a behavioral health crisis, you can call the crisis hotline at 1-800-631-1314. If you are outside of Maricopa County, please call your local crisis hotline or call 1-800-273-8255. If you are located outside the United States, call your local emergency line immediately.